This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Turns out it really is all about the Benjamins. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today the 14th of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The theme of the program today is money. And yes, I know that is always the theme of the program, but it feels especially on point today to call it out because, number one, the Fed's decision on the cost of money comes tomorrow, which we will get to in just a couple of minutes. But also, and where we begin today, because we are all just putting less money aside than we used to. At one point during the height of the pandemic, Americans were saving 34% of their disposable income. In April this year, just over 4%. That's to be expected to some extent, given all the federal relief programs a couple of years ago. But given that inflation is still where inflation is, it means that the economic cushion people were able to build up over the past couple of years is losing some of its stuffing. And yet, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports, we keep on spending.
Kevin Barry has not taken a long vacation in, well, ever, he says. But this summer, he decided he was not only going to take a vacation, he was going to take his bucket list vacation.
Well, I came to Paris after a work trip to take cooking lessons.
Barry says he's been saving up and he is using it.
I'm 43. Ever since I graduated college, there's been waves of recession. So I guess my thinking is we just got to do the best we can to prepare for it. But we can't live in economic fear.
Americans have been saving less and less in the past year. Some because they're spending more on YOLO trips to France. Others because they're spending more on trips to the grocery store.
The savings rate recently in the past few months has dropped below its pre-pandemic trend.
Kayla Bruhn is an economic analyst at Morning Consult. After peaking in 2020, the savings rate, while still high, has been coming down in fits and starts as consumers spent that money on homes and furniture and other goods.
So initially, that really big stockpile of savings contributed to really strong spending.
And of course, really strong spending combined with broken supply chains kicked off inflation. So now,
inflation is really high, but people are also still spending.
Dawit Kabeda is senior economist at the Credit Union National Association.
People have pent up demand for services.
They used their savings to drive inflation, and now inflation is driving them to use their savings.
They're saving a lot less, and it's a troubling thing because we are also seeing things like credit card debt increase.
Matt Schultz is chief credit analyst at LendingTree. That is not all terrible, he says. Rising credit card debt can be a sign of confidence in the economy. But if inflation is going to get under control, consumer spending is most likely going to have to slow down. So now that we are saving less, we may eventually cool our spending too. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, well, you know, look, it was better than yesterday, right? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Calendar says it's almost summer, but in the crypto economy, we seem to be headed for the depths of winter. Crypto winter is actually the phrase people are using because pretty much everything is getting clobbered, from Bitcoin to the countless companies that support the crypto ecosystem, including exchanges and lenders, which have operated so far with minimal regulation. Marketplace's Lily Jamali is on crypto for us today.
For people wondering if they should get into crypto, the FOMO of a few months ago is wearing off. People are losing a lot of money, says NYU Stern marketing professor Paul Hardart. Just like the dot-com bubble or crypto winners of the past, this moment proves that business fundamentals are what matter.
Some of these businesses will definitely prevail, and some of the ones that are really just errant, and they'll go away, and that's probably the right thing.
Telling the difference between quality companies and duds isn't always easy, says Duke finance professor Campbell Harvey.
Unfortunately, given this space is so new, there's not a lot of guidance, and people often just reach for the yield and then sometimes are negatively surprised when a problem arises.
And he says there will be ups and downs.
Indeed, spectacular ups and downs.
The downs are hitting especially hard right now. Just weeks after the stablecoin Terra imploded, so far this week, Celsius Network, a major crypto lender, paused withdrawals, leading to questions about whether it's at risk of insolvency. And the industry's dominant exchange, Coinbase, said it's laying off 18% of its workforce. Linda Shea worked as a product manager at Coinbase during the crypto winter of 2014.
For me, that was really hard financially. And at Coinbase, they just made us focus on the mission of the company and really tried to keep us focused on that, which was really helpful to build through the bear market.
Now the founder of crypto fund Scalar Capital, she says she's not worried because of the volume of talent that's pouring into crypto, and not just in finance.
We're seeing crypto touched upon so many different industries, like NFTs, where people are talking about art and music, and we're talking about how crypto can improve science.
In fact, she says she's never been more optimistic. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
So as we try to puzzle out exactly what Jay Powell and the Federal Open Market Committee are going to do tomorrow, maybe a place to start is with the data that we have. The headline data point, of course, is consumer inflation at 8.6% year over year. But here is another one that we know is on Powell's mind.
Right now in the labor market, there are two job openings for every unemployed person. Yeah. That's historically high level.
We know that's on his mind because that was the Fed chair himself talking to me last month. And that two job openings for every person who's looking ratio, that hasn't changed since. The latest data says there are 11.4 million open jobs in this economy, 5.7 million people looking for work. And remember, one of the things the Fed is trying to do is to close that gap between the number of job openings and the number of job seekers while keeping unemployment as low as possible.
My name is Pascal Michaya, and I'm an associate professor of economics at Brown University.
And here's why we called him.
I've written several papers that use the beverage curve, document the shape of the beverage curve, and models that give you beverage curves.
The beverage curve, named after British economist William Beveridge, not, you know, beverages. It's a representation, a chart, basically, of the relationship between unfilled jobs and unemployment. Relevant, I think you will agree, to the Fed's challenge right now.
The beverage curve is just beautiful. You don't need to do anything. You just plot vacancies and unemployment. It's there. You know, it appears immediately. It's such a, you know, beautiful and also robust relationship.
Charts in audio, we know, are hard, but bear with me here for a minute because the beverage curve is important for understanding why the Fed is doing what it's doing. This is not, granted, a perfect analogy, but picture a skateboard ramp. And imagine that the wall, the vertical axis, the part where skateboarders first drop down, is measured in unfilled jobs. And the ground, the horizontal axis, is unemployment. The economic magic happens at that bit where the wall curves gently down into the floor.
These two things always move together.
And in good times, where there are more open jobs, the economy figuratively moves up the wall of that curve. And in less good times, in bad times even, when there are fewer open jobs, there's more unemployment, so the economy moves down toward the flat bottom.
And so we are just always moving back and forth on that beverage curve.
The interesting thing about beverage curve is that, you know, it has been doing some major acrobatics during the pandemic.
That's Veronica Dollar. She's an assistant professor of economics at the State University of New York, Old Westbury.
There are all these like leaps and bounds and shifts and twists.
In other words, not gently moving along that curve, right? Because remember, there are two jobs for every person who is unemployed.
So basically, there was a increase or sharp increase in job openings, which outpaced the decline in the unemployment rate. So the curve also tilted steeply upwards.
Here is why the curve matters. What the Fed is trying to do is bring labor demand, right, that's open jobs, more in line with labor supply, the people who are looking. And historically, what the beverage curve tells us is that if labor demand, those open jobs, goes down, unemployment is going to go up, right? It moves down toward the floor. But right now, because labor demand is so high and the beverage curve is so steep, right, up along that wall, there's a lot of vertical distance between job openings and the flat part of the ramp where unemployment outpaces job openings.
And the argument here is that, yes, it's possible because of the steepness that maybe this tight monetary policy might not have such a bad impact on the unemployment rate.
There is a trade-off in what the Fed is trying to do here, which is why we're talking about the beverage curve. Raise interest rates, tightening monetary policy and slowing the economy to control inflation, while at the same time not doing too much and thus keeping unemployment low. But that soft landing you keep hearing about, which honestly is looking a little trickier than it did, oh, I don't know, even a couple of weeks ago. Coming up,
I am planning on investing more than 50% of my income.
That's a lot. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 151 today, about a half percent, 30,364. The NASDAQ gained 19 points. NASDAQ, about 0.2%, 10,828. I don't know what's going on. S&P 500 down 14 points, about 0.4%, finished at 37.35. Heard from Sabri that people's savings are going way down, spending that money saved during the pandemic and not putting as much away, right? So, looking at some bank stocks, Citigroup gained 0.6%. Bank of America lost 1.7%. Heard from Lily Jamali about crypto winter. So some crypto stocks. Coinbase talked about this, right? Lily did. Laying off 18% of its employees. 4,900 employees at Coinbase, by the way. Shares down 0.8% today. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note. Get this. 3.48%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It can be useful, we think around here, to call a rotating list of regulars from time to time and get their thoughts on their particular slices of this and the global economy. Lisa Goldenberg, the president of the Delaware Steel Company, was on speed dial today. Why, Lisa Goldenberg, it has been forever.
Yes, it has. I don't know, Kai. Maybe too long, I'd say. Let's go with too long.
Too long. It's been like 15 months. How you been?
I've been good. Yeah, everybody's we're all doing really, really well.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. So look, here's the full disclosure part of this interview. We first started thinking about getting you back on the phone like 6 weeks ago when the whole thing about China tariffs and will the Biden administration get rid of them and how do you feel about tariffs? But now, honestly, I mean, we can get to tariffs later if you want to, but honestly, the vibe, economically speaking now, is a little bit different. And I wonder, first of all, what your sense is as a woman sort of in the heart of American manufacturing.
Well, the down and dirty quick easy is it's kind of too soon to tell. There's a shift. And when you're standing in the middle of the shift, you don't know where this is going. There were signs of this in February as we approached in the war in Ukraine, and then the market really took off and things got hot. It sort of kicked the can down the curb a little bit, if you will. People are nervous. I just, on my way before this interview, filled up my car, which I know for LA standards is not crazy, but it just cost me $150 to fill up my car. Yeah, yeah. Thank goodness for me, that's doable, but that's a real thing.
Or do you have recession fears? Not you personally as a consumer in this economy, but as a woman running a company, right? You're a CEO. You've got to make some decisions. Is that influencing what decisions you're making? Lisa?
No, not yet.
All right. Ooh, that long pause threw me. Clearly you were thinking, but I was holy cow.
I wanted to think about that, but the I'd like to say, yes, you know, I'm planning now for the future. But at the real truth is, no, I'm living in this moment and I'm feeling the anxiety, but on a day-to-day basis, no, I'm not planning for what might come down the road. And you know me, I'm like eternally optimistic. So.
Yeah, but you're also, I mean, you are an optimist, right? And there's generally a positive tone to the things you and I talk about, but you're also a realist who's been in this for a long time, and you've seen ups and downs. And I guess I'm a little surprised that you're not a little more cautious, I guess.
Well, I would say, look, definitely cautious, but you said planning for the future. I'm definitely looking on the horizon hard. And I think the fact that in February, things were getting kind of crappy and then we got this little bump does not give me a false sense of security, but sort of like a nudge, like you were given a shot, but you know what's coming, that kind of thing.
Yeah. We should talk about the little bump that steel got in February. And I'm assuming here you're talking about the invasion of Ukraine and what that has meant for you and your line of work. Explain that a little bit.
So what it means is that we do not have a war economy in this country, thank goodness. And it's not the old adage, as was said the other day by some people on the Hill, that, you know, it's a matter of national security, that steel is, we're not building warships. However, it is a world economy. And when you take out major players, anything that destabilizes the world economy affects steel, affects all of us. So that bump that occurred with the war in Ukraine, really, as European markets scrambled to fill orders of steel that they weren't going to get, or that of other items they weren't going to get that needed to ramp up manufacturing in those countries as things became, you know, destabilized.
Lisa Goldenberg, she's the president of the Delaware Steel Company. Lisa, thank you so much. I'm sorry it took us so long to call you back.
As always, it's a pleasure to speak. Take care.
Talk to you soon. The heat we had out here in the Southwest over the weekend, 100 degrees or more in places like Phoenix and Las Vegas, is forecast to move north and east over the next couple of days. And the reflex response is going to be to crank up the AC. But unlike with heating in the winter, very few cities and states have any kind of requirement that landlords provide a cool enough apartment or that utilities not turn people's electricity off in the summertime. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
Every summer, when it gets hot, the number of people calling the Texas Tenants Union goes way up.
There will be people all summer long that go for days, weeks, sometimes months without air conditioning because their landlord refuses to maintain it.
Sandy Rollins is executive director of the Dallas-based Tenants' Rights Organization. Dallas is actually one of the few cities in the country that requires landlords to provide and maintain air conditioners or central air for tenants. But there's not always great enforcement, Rollins says. And even when there is, low-income tenants might have an air conditioner.
But they can't afford the bill.
So they don't turn it on.
I would love to see more states and cities enact a renter's right to air conditioning. And in tandem with that, pay a lot closer attention to the issue of utility affordability.
Sam Willens is with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
This is really an expectation that is already built into the law around warming in the winter. And it's really just as critical an issue in the summer around cooling.
More people die of heat-related causes than any other kind of extreme weather. Yet there are many more laws and programs to help low-income people stay warm in the winter than cool in the summer.
These rules were passed 20, 30, 40 years ago. So part of this is that the system we have to protect families, the public health systems, have not caught up with the current rise in temperatures.
Mark Wolf at the National Energy Assistance Directors Association says it's time for cities and states to catch up as climate change is making extreme heat more common in more places.
It's going from being a regional concern to being a national concern.
In most of the country, he says, air conditioning is a necessity now, not a luxury. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Broadly speaking, people born between 1997 and 2012 are known as Gen Z. That makes the oldest of them halfway through their 20s already. Some of them graduated college into the teeth of a pandemic, and now they're dealing with inflation the highest it's been, of course, since their parents were growing up. Not a recipe for stability. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports now on the financial lives of Z.
It's Memorial Day weekend, and 25-year-old Guy DeWeaver II is going clubbing.
And then, as you know, this week, Amazon announced a 20-to-1 stock split.
Crazy, right?
Investment clubbing, so, that is. DeWeaver has invited some friends over to his house in Dumfries, Virginia. They're all part of an investing group of young Black professionals. DeWeaver graduated from college at the beginning of the pandemic. The job he'd lined up?
That offer got, they didn't say rescinded, but they said postponed indefinitely.
DeWeaver ended up going to grad school and is about to start work at a consulting company, but he knows he needs a nest egg.
I am planning on investing more than 50% of my income.
DeWeaver's friend, 23-year-old Emmanuel Perez, estimates he lost about 40% of his nest egg to the cryptocurrency plunge. Now he's going to rein in his risk and try for a cushion of old-fashioned dollars. Perez says he grew up just above the poverty line in the Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads area. He sold homemade fidget spinners in fourth grade and Smarties candy in seventh grade.
Yeah, I bought Smarties and saw that kids were, you know, crushing it up and inhaling it. It was in limited supply, and I saw demand for it, and I just met that business need.
Perez says that's still his mindset. Same with his friend Leah Smith, who's joined the group on Zoom from Arizona. Smith is 22, and she says people close to her have died from COVID. Her pastor, her former babysitter.
I lost a lot of people along the way.
and they had bigger dreams than mine. And I felt like, in a way, I just wanted to live out what they could have done for themselves.
Smith's drive impresses Ione McNeil. She teaches a summer program on investing for Gen Zers. McNeil herself is 34, a millennial. She says her generation had an easier time and compares Gen Z to people who came of age during World War II.
I'm starting to see those same qualities and traits in Gen Zers because of when they were born, the experiences that they're having to encounter.
Older Gen Zers remember the 2008 financial crisis. 23-year-old Jim Zielemann is a data scientist in Gainesville, Virginia, and about to start a new job that pays six figures. But he never feels financially secure because of what he saw growing up.
I remember, like, my dad, he would come home, and he's like, oh, I got laid off today. And then he just sat around for like a year applying for jobs.
Zielemann's parents had savings, but some of his friends' parents didn't and lost their homes to foreclosure. Zielemann says he'll buy a home when he's saved up enough to pay entirely in cash. He hates debt. That's no surprise to Christy Rodriguez, who heads the Nationwide Retirement Institute. Their recent survey found that other Gen Zers say they're putting off big purchases like houses or cars because of inflation. And Rodriguez says about 15% of the Gen Zers they talk to are reducing contributions to their 401k retirement plans.
But when you impact your retirement savings, that could potentially, you know, determine how long you work, determine the lifestyle that you would want to live.
That's been a theme at the investment club meeting at Guy DeWeaver's house.
I see, man. Man.
Before he leaves, DeWeaver's friend Toby Plumpter tells the group he had been contributing 10% of his salary to his 401k, but cut it to 6% because of the cost of living.
When I started realizing that, hey, where's my paycheck going? I realized that maybe I'm overallocating my investments. Let me lower my investments into my 401k down a bit.
He's also rethinking plans to buy a new car. In Dumfries, Virginia, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today probably should have gotten this up higher, to be honest with you. The latest reading on inflation at the wholesale level, the producer price index, came out this morning, up 10.8% in May. That is year over year, down just a hair from earlier, but still 10.8%. Not great. All right, we're out of here, but here is your moment of economic context. Perhaps a moment of good riddance. I don't know. You get to decide. Saw this in the Wall Street Journal today. We've known this was coming, but Microsoft's Internet Explorer officially goes away tomorrow. Loved by some, not loved by many, many others. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.